I will be reading a selection from Marilyn Robinson's Housekeeping, starting on page 195 and going to page 198. This is a scene where Ruthie is reflecting on her probable forced separation from Sylvie. Sylvie did not want to lose me. She did not want me to grow gigantic and multiple, so that I seemed to fill the whole house. And she did not wish me to turn subtle and miscible, so that I could pass through the membranes that separate dream and dream. She did not wish to remember me. She much preferred my simple, ordinary presence, silent and ungainly though I might be, for she could regard me without strong emotion, a familiar shape, a familiar face, a familiar silence. She could forget I was in the room. She could speak to herself or to someone in her thoughts with pleasure and animation, even while I sat beside her. This was the measure of our intimacy, but she gave almost no thought to me at all. But if she lost me, I would become extraordinary by my vanishing. Imagine that my mother had come back that Sunday, say in the evening, and that she had kissed our hair and that all the necessary business of reconciliation had been transacted between her and my grandmother, and that we sat down to supper, and Lucille and I had grown restless listening to stories about people we did not know, and had gone out to play in the chill grass in the strange, deep yard, hoping our mother would notice how late it was, and hoping she would not. Say we had driven home the whole night long, Lucille asleep in the back seat, cramped and aware of the chilly air that whistled through the inch of open window, diluting my mother's perfume and the smoke from her cigarettes. She might sing, "What'll I do when you are far away," or "Love letters straight from your heart," or "Cottage for Sale," or "Irene." Those were her favorite songs. I remember looking at her from the back seat as we drove toward Fingerbone, the waves in the crown of her hair, the square shoulders of her good gray dress, her long hands at the top of the steering wheel, the nails gleaming a deep red. I was struck by her calm, by the elegant competence of her slightest gesture. Lucille and I had never seen her drive before, and we were very much impressed. The interior of Bernice's car smelled dusty, like an old sofa. We held on to the thick gray cord that hung across the back of the front seat and bounced up and down as if we were driving a stagecoach, the air filled with dust particles that looked like tiny bent threads or hairs, which someone had once told us were atoms. We fought and counted horses in cemeteries, and she never spoke to us once. We asked to stop at an ice cream stand by the road in the woods, and she stopped and bought us hot fudge sundaes, and the lady there said we were nice, and her mother smiled absently and said, "Sometimes they are." It seemed to me that in all this there was the hush and solemnity of incipient transfiguration. Perhaps memory is a seat not only of prophecy, but of miracle as well. For it seems to me that we were recalled again and again to a sense of her calm. It seems that her quiet startled us, though she was always quiet. I remember her standing with her arms folded, pushing at the dust with the toe of her pump, while she waited for us to finish our sundaes. We sat at a hot green metal table, weather-dulled and sticky, and loud black flies with rainbows in their wings fed at the pools of drying ice cream, and then scrubbed their maws meticulously with their forelegs, like house cats. She was so tall and quiet in her silvery gray dress, never looking toward us, and we were sweaty and sticky and cloyed and tired of each other. I remember her, grave with the peace of the destined, the summoned, and she seems almost an apparition. But if she had simply brought us home again to the high-frame apartment building with the scaffolding of stairs, I would not remember her that way. Her eccentricities might have irked and embarrassed us when we grew older. We might have forgotten her birthday and teased her to buy a car or to change her hair. We would have left her finally. We would have laughed together with bitterness and satisfaction at our strangely solitary childhood, in light of which our failings would seem inevitable and all our attainments miraculous. Then we would telephone her out of guilt and nostalgia and laugh bitterly afterward because she asked us nothing and told us nothing and fell silent from time to time and was glad to get off the phone. We would take her to a restaurant and a movie on Thanksgiving and buy her bestsellers for Christmas. She would try to give her outings and make her find some interests, but she would soften and shrink in our hands and become infirm. She would bear her infirmities with the same taut patience with which she bore our solicitude and with which she had borne every other aspect of life, and her silence would make us more and more furious. Lucille and I would see each other often and almost never talk of other things. Nothing would be more familiar to us than her silence and her sad, abstracted calm. I know how it would have been, because I have observed that, in the way people are strange, they grow stranger. We would have laughed and felt abandoned and aggrieved, never knowing that she had gone all the way to the edge of the lake to rest her head and close her eyes, and had come back again for our sakes. She would have remained untransfigured. We would never have known that her calm was as slight as a skin on water, and that her calm sustained her as a coin can float on still water. We would have known nothing of the nature and reach of her sorrow if she had come back. But she left us, and broke the family, and the sorrow was released, and we saw its wings, and saw it fly a thousand ways into the hills. And sometimes I think sorrow is a predatory thing, because birds scream at dawn with a marvelous terror, and there is, as I have said before, a deathly bitterness in the smell of ponds and ditches. When we were children, and frightened in the dark, my grandmother used to say if we kept our eyes closed, we would not see it. That was when I noticed the correspondence between the space within the circle of my skull and the space around me. I saw just the same figure against the lid of my eye or the wall of my room or in the trees beyond my window. Even the illusion of perimeters fails when families are separated.